Sources along I-85 told reporters today Vice President Joe Biden was spotted hitchhiking to the Democratic National Convention, reportedly relying on his charm and the generosity of passing motorists to cover the roughly 400 miles from Washington, D.C. to Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, I was headed down to Petersburg, and I saw the Vice President standing by the side of the road with a bratty-looking backpack and his thumb hanging out. When he got in, he seemed upset that there was nowhere to play his Foreigner tapes. Then he pulled his Philadelphia Eagles cap down, put his boots up on the dashboard, and conked right off for a couple hours. When he woke up, he told me to pull over because he said he had to drain the snake.
Saying it was his duty to, quote, heed the open road, Biden has reportedly ridden in at least 11 different vehicles between the Capitol and the border of Virginia and North Carolina, with sources saying the vice president insisted on making a one-night stop in Richmond to, quote, catch up with an old flame.
Well, we were getting gas, and he came out with a 24-pack of Coors Light and a bottle of Jack Daniels. He said it was really time to get the party started. He then offered to make us the sickest apple pipe we'd ever seen.
He kept asking if I had the cojones to make it with Cindy Crawford if she was ever lying there spread eagle waiting for me. He smelled pretty bad, like cigarettes and body odor.
The vice president, known throughout his political career as a frequent hitcher, has not confirmed with aides when he might arrive at the convention, telling them, quote, I'll get there whenever the hell I get there.
I dropped him off at a truck stop near Chester about two nights ago. Said he planned on sleeping there. Told me all the band needs to sleep is a bench to lie on and a cold one to nurse him to bed. I said it might be a little dangerous out there alone. He said he was carrying his butterfly knife and that he just got his green belt in Taekwondo.
Owners and employees of numerous establishments along Biden's route reported seeing him attempting to get rides from customers, telling them that he needed to get to Charlotte pronto so he could give a big fancy speech in front of some real uptight gas bags.
He was here last night, and he kept buying everyone sitting at the bar mimosas. So I cut his tab off at about $400. But when I asked him to pay up, he said all he had was a pack of Marlboros. And then he was like, Uncle Joe can think of a couple ways to pay you. I turned around for 1 second, and the son of a bitch was gone. To be honest, I thought he was kind of cute.
Biden was last seen at this rest stop where he reportedly purchased some corn nuts in the August issue of Swank.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Suicide, it's a suicide. There's nothing more romantic than fantasy. And we can make the war on terror distract them like videos and TV shows with scantily clad women. Cover them with oil, rub it in like lotion, put F-16s in the skies and battleships in the ocean. The voters won't notice. Tell them you're either with us or you're against us, and in the same breath over-vaccinate our soldiers. They'll want to believe these lies are true to the point that even Cynthia McKinney with proof won't be able to convince them that there's a connection between the war on terror and the Carlyle Group. They'll need to believe these lies are true. I said over-vaccinate our soldiers and coat their ammunition with radioactive DU. Fear is the final frontier of the defenseless. If it's logical, tell them it's senseless. You're either with us or you're against us. It's all about confusion. Name it the Patriot Act if it acts against the Constitution. One man, one vote is a joke. You should be more concerned about your family going broke. Poof. Mirrors. Smoke. Now, watch me raise spending and lower taxes. The answer to any question that the 911 commission might ask is, we believe stem cell research is immoral. North Korea has WMDs, translation, time for operation, Iraqi freedom, sacrifice American lives on Baghdad soil, earn more from our investments in defense and increase our supply of oil. The question is, how come we haven't done anything about the genocide in Darfur? The answer is, we believe in protecting the sanctity of marriage. No, no child left behind. Wait, just give them a slogan. Let's roll. We're gonna smoke them out of their holes. Watch the hands, watch the hands. In this hand, Osama bin Laden. In this hand, the World Trade Center explodes. Now, I know you want me to get them for you, but the $200 billion question is, how much is it worth to you for me to allow my cronies' investments in defense to work for you? Don't worry about what we knew prior to the fact about the attack. That's a distraction. Carol Ann, look away from the oil fields. The important thing to remember is that voting for my opponent will get you killed. There's a connection between his election and your family's demise. That's why African-American voters have to be disenfranchised. Neo-democracy means that the electronic voting machine companies get to help us decide. That way you can win the election and still lose. That's the new world order. Global economy, no borders, no sovereignty. Widow's cries, corporate plutocracy. True lies.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Dear parents, before a national convention of its nominee for president, to be formally notified of his selection is unprecedented and unusual. But these are unprecedented and unusual times. Yes, the people of this country want a genuine choice this year, not a choice between two names for the same reactionary doctrine. Ours must be a party of liberal thought, of planned action, of enlightened international outlook, and of the greatest good to the greatest number of our citizens. Now, it is inevitable, and the choice is not ours. The choice is that of the time. It is inevitable that the main issue of this campaign should revolve about the clear fact of our economic condition, a depression so deep that it is without precedent in modern history. You know the story. The surplus invested in unnecessary plant became idle. Men lost their jobs. Purchasing power dried up. Banks became frightened and started calling loans. Those who had money were afraid to part with it. Credit contracted. Industry stopped. Commerce declined and unemployment mounted. And there we are today. Translate that into human terms. See how the events of the past 3 years have come home to specific groups of people. First, the group dependent on industry. Second, the group dependent on agriculture. Third, and made up in large part of members of the first two groups, the people who are called small investors and depositors. In fact, the strongest possible tie between the first two groups, agriculture and industry, is the fact that the savings, and to a degree the security of both, are tied together in that third group, the credit structure of the nation. Never in history have the interests of all the people been so united in a single economic problem. Picture to yourself, for instance, the great groups of property owned by millions of our citizens, represented by credits issued in the form of bonds and mortgages. Government bonds of all kinds, federal, state, county, municipal, bonds of industrial companies, of utility companies, mortgages on real estate in farms and cities, and finally the vast investments of the nation in the railroad. What is the measure of the security of each of those groups? We know well that in our complicated, interrelated credit structure, if any one of these credit groups collapses, they may all collapse. Danger to one is danger to all. And how, I ask, has the present administration in Washington treated the interrelationship of these credit groups? The answer is clear. It has not recognized that interrelation existed at all. Why, the nation asks, has Washington failed to understand that all of these groups, each and every one, the top of the pyramid and the bottom of the pyramid, must be considered together, that each and every one of them is dependent on every other?
I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. Let us all here assembled constitute ourselves prophets of a new order.
You took me up to heaven when you took me in your arms. I was dazzled by your kisses, blinded by your charms. I was lost in a fool's paradise, good and lost. food paradise. When you told me that you love me, I gave my heart to you, and I wondered if there could be any truth in love so new. I was lost in a fool's paradise, good and lost in a fool's paradise. The whole world was my kingdom, and your love the gem in my crown. And I saw you glance at a new romance, and my love came tumbling down. Though you treat me kind of ghoulish, and they never let me know that you think I'm being foolish, because I love you so, I'll still get lost in a fool's paradise. Lost with you in a fool's paradise.
The chair recognizes the delegate from Ohio, the chair of the platform drafting committee, former Governor Ted Strickland.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move that we suspend the rules to permit an amendment to the platform adopted by this convention last night.
Governor Strickland has made a motion on the floor to suspend the rules. Is there a second? A motion to suspend the rules to permit the amendment to the platform has been moved and seconded. This is a non-debatable motion requiring a two-thirds vote. All of those in favor of suspending the rules, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. In the opinion of the chair, there's been a two-thirds affirmative vote to suspend the rules. Governor, would you like to make your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This summer, I was proud to serve this party as the platform drafting committee chair. As the chair, I come before you today to discuss two important matters related to our party's national platform. As an ordained United Methodist minister, I am here to attest and affirm that our faith and belief in God is central to the American story and informs the values we've expressed in our party's platform. In addition, President Obama recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and our party's platform should as well.
Though you treat me kind of coolish, and they never let me know that you think I'm being foolish, because I love you so, I'll still get lost in a fool's paradise. Lost with you in a fool's paradise. Lost with you in a fool's paradise.
Aloha. Please give a round of applause to the DJ for the convention, DJ Cassidy.
Wow, we are a convention that really looks like America.
Obamacare is a badge of honor.
Okay, why don't you have,
mine.
That, right? Okay.
That's right.
These speeches are great.
This is our platform!
The economy does significantly better under Democrats.
Being asked to pay your fair share isn't class warfare, it's patriotism.
Thank God for the food stamps, public education, and Pell Grants.
Medical research, good roads, and clean energy.
Equal pay for equal work.
Birth control.
This is our platform.
Success isn't about how much money you make. It's about the difference you make in people's lives.
And then there's Mitt Romney.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country.
Governor Romney has undergone an extreme makeover.
We learned he chose Swiss bank accounts and Cayman Island tax shelters over American institutions.
If Mitt
was Santa Claus, he would fire the reindeer and outsource the elves.
You know what Mitt Romney said?
Let Detroit go bankrupt.
This is awkward.
Women are more than capable of making our own choices about our bodies and our health care.
This is our platform.
You're about to watch a conversation that we on this show think there should be more of on television. One like most people, most of you would have at dinner or over drinks without worrying about offending critics, constituents, political parties, or fans. Sometimes it gets heated. Sometimes it is uncomfortable. And not everyone agrees. Not all the time. But it's honest, it's authentic, and it's transparent. And again, that's what this show is about. That said, it has been quite a week for the head of the Democratic National Committee, Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's been accused of everything from leading a party that turns its back on God to overshadowing the president's reelection bid to flat out lying. So, with the DNC convention behind her, I invited her on to set the record straight without talking points. She wasn't always happy with my questions, but they had to be asked. So here it is. Thanks for coming on this Saturday night. I know it's been a very busy time for you, and you know, you've been at the center of some controversy. And before, I just want you to come on to set the record straight. Now that you've had a chance to look back, this isn't an ambush interview. I'm not trying. This isn't got you. I just want to get some clarity and see if you've had some clarity. So I want to start with some of the comments that were made on Monday to Jewish Democrats about Republicans and Israel. Specifically, a reference you made to the Israeli ambassador. Here's exactly what you said.
We know, and I've heard no less than Ambassador Michael Oren say this, that what the Republicans are doing is dangerous for Israel. They're undermining Israel's security by suggesting that the United States and Israel don't have anything other than a unique and close and special relationship.
So you have said that the reporter, you accused the reporter of misquoting you, you said you didn't say it, but then in that clip, you said it, and you said, I categorically deny saying it, but there it is.
We cannot and will not sustain deficits like these without end. Contrary to the prevailing wisdom in Washington these past few years, we cannot simply spend as we please and defer the consequences to the next budget, the next administration, or the next generation. We are paying the price for these deficits right now. In 2008 alone, we paid $250 billion in interest on our debt, one in every 10 taxpayer dollars. That is more than three times what we spent on education that year, more than seven times what we spent on VA health care. So if we confront this crisis without also confronting the deficits that help cause it, we risk sinking into another crisis down the road as our interest payments rise, our obligations come due, confidence in our economy erodes, and our children and our grandchildren are unable to pursue their dreams because they're saddled with our debts. And that's why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office. Now, this will not be easy. It will require us to make difficult decisions and face challenges we've long neglected. But I refuse to leave our children with a debt that they cannot repay. And that means taking responsibility right now in this administration for getting our spending under control.
Think it over and think of me. Think it over and you will see a happy day when you and I think it's one and two suppose goodbye. You think it over, yes, think it over. Only heart grows cold and old.
Move over, Mitt and Barack. The new candidate that's leaving all the other presidential hopefuls quaking is this guy, the world's first zombie to run for office.
Welcome to the Mecca among sports. I'm dead serious when I tell you this. It is a joy to have you.
Complete with trophy human wife by his side, he drove his tour bus into Charlotte, the city hosting the Democratic National Convention. And more talkative than her husband, it was up to Patty Morgan Zombie to give the campaign spiel.
We think we're going to do well. We think that some candidates will carry the blue states, some candidates will carry the red states, but we're a shoo-in for the dead states.
She also outlined his manifesto, which was fairly zombie-centric.
My husband is running for president because he could have taken a certain issue lying down because he was, well, already lying down, but he decided to stand up and pledge to fight for equal viewing opportunities for all. He has vowed to increase the workforce for every zombie out there.
Sadly, however, we won't be seeing this zombie in the White House anytime soon. This is, in fact, part of a TV stunt, meaning the undead of the US will have to wait a little bit longer.
The big question today has been, are you better off now? Right. It's the famous Reagan question. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
The fundamental question.
The central question.
The burning question.
The big question.
The are you better off question.
Are you better off?
Are you better off?
Are you better off?
Better off.
Are you better off?
Better off today.
Better off today.
Better off today.
Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
That's going to be the pattern today.
You can hear the screams of all the frightened spectators.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
No, but that's not the question of this election.
Wait a minute. It looks terrible to say that we're not answering the question. Of course, yes, we're better off than they were 4 years ago.
The answer is yes, you're better off.
We definitely are. We're definitely better off.
You want to know whether we're better off? I got a little bumper sticker for you. Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive.
Are you better off?
Are you better off?
Are you better off?
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Implicit in that question is, are you better off? Are you better off now than you were?
I can go slow ahead. Come on down and chum some of this shit.
Are you better off?
Are folks better off now?
Are you better off?
Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
No one does it better than Fox. No one else comes close.
Ha, all right.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What is Fox News? It's just a parade of propaganda, isn't it? It's just a festival of ignorance.
Anyway, I'm going to dodge the rest of your question.
Finds that over 60% of employers are now checking online amateur pornography of potential job candidates. Is it fair to base hiring decisions on an applicant's online porn?
Now, this is not fair at all. For instance, if there's a RedTube video of my girlfriend slapping me and choking me and riding me, that shouldn't be an indication I'm going to lack leadership in a work situation.
Duncan, it's going to be hard to convince an employer who's masturbating to that video otherwise.
Exactly. My potential employer might see all those videos of my husband tying me up and having his way with me, and then they're going to think that I'm not going to be assertive enough for the job.
I mean, these days, everyone has an XTube account. It's your own fault if you lose out on a job because you've got tons of videos on the web where you're slowly inserting various household objects into your anus.
Yeah, but what if you're shoving those things in your anus on your own time?
But let's be smart about it, you know? If you know an employer might see this, you know, post a video of yourself getting double-teamed by two brawny Latinos to show your support of diversity in the workplace.
Oh, and multitasking.
And multitasking.
But I still want to have the right to badmouth my employer while shooting a POV hand job without fear of affecting my future prospects for work.
If you don't want to jeopardize the content of your porn, you can always shoot from the eyes down.
Oh, but that's not the same. If you cover the eyes, that's where the innocence is.
Yeah, but guys, don't these amateur sites also have privacy settings that you can set so that future employers don't have access to these questionable videos?
Right.
Okay, but that doesn't protect you from appearing in other people's videos. Now, I found on YouPorn a video of me participating in some piss play at a party a few years ago.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, no, it was a really good time for everybody. But the thing is, we didn't know who uploaded it to the web. Hmm. So am I supposed to leave an orgy just because someone shows up with a camera?
No one's saying you should leave an orgy.
No. Right.
No. It's more complicated.
So now, if I go to a party, I wear something like this in case that situation comes up again.
I like that. I actually shoot my porn in a sepia tone and make it look old-timey, so if people see it, they'll think it's my grandfather.
Blue days, black nights, blue tears keep on falling for you, dear. Now you're gone. Blue days, black nights, my heart keeps on calling for you, dear, and you alone. Memories of you make me sorry. I gave you reason to doubt me, but now you're gone, and I am left here all alone with the blue memories I think of you.
In Romania, poses with men dressed as members of the Taliban, whilst another dances on top of a car. It's not how most people imagine their wedding day, but it's a craze that's really taking off in the country. Bride napping sees women being abducted halfway through the big day, with their husbands being asked for a ransom in return.
The car was waiting for me in the front of the restaurant. I was given the signal to leave by my friends, and we came here to have some fun. Now everyone's thinking what ransom to ask the groom for. If he agrees, my friends will have to take me back, and my husband will have to obey and endure the punishment for not watching over his wife.
Snatched from under their groom's nose whilst the wedding party is in full swing, the women are held hostage at Bucharest's Arch of Triumph before a ransom is arranged. Well, it's definitely one way to test your husband on the first day of married life.
Blue days, black nights, I didn't realize I would miss you the way I did. And now, somehow, I know I will pay for the times I have made you blue. Memories of you make me sorry. I gave you reason to doubt me, but now you're gone, and I am left here all alone with the blue memories I think of you.
The Nicaraguan government says about 3,000 people are being evacuated from areas near the San Cristobal volcano, which is spewing ash and gas. Soldiers have been sent to the region northwest of the capital after the government ordered local communities to leave. The volcano began erupting on Saturday morning and belched an ash cloud of up to 3 miles into the air. The volcano has long been active and stirred in mid-2008 when it expelled gas and rumbled with a series of small eruptions. A report predicts more gas emissions could be expected from the volcano. Nicaragua has been on alert since an earthquake hit neighboring Costa Rica last week.
Well, get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Well, I roll my breakfast of a hot baby. Well, you wear those dresses and the sun comes shining through. Yeah, you wear those dresses and the sun comes shining through. Well, see my eyes on a dancing long. Everybody now, take a rattle roll. Take a rattle roll. Take
and ash spew from Guatemala's Fuego volcano. The huge peak, one of the country's most active, has been relatively quiet recently, but over the last few days has become increasingly noisy. According to geologists, lava flows over a kilometre long are trickling down the east and west of the mountain, whilst ash clouds are towering over a kilometre into the sky. No evacuations have been ordered so far, but officials have alerted aviation authorities about the plumes of ash, which could cause problems for air traffic.
University of Washington researcher is part of a study to see if it's possible to make clouds cloudier. As King 5 environmental specialist Gary Chittum reports, if the researchers can, they may be able to slow down climate change.
We know a lot about clouds here in the Northwest. Most days, we live in them.
There's one here off the Washington coast.
That's why UW researcher Rob Wood lives here.
They have so many varieties of form, and they kind of look like things.
Wood loves clouds. His office is more like a cloud studio. And now Wood is part of an experiment to see if he can make clouds thicker.
That will reflect more sunlight back to space and will enact a cooling effect. Less sunlight will get through to the surface of the Earth.
So here's the deal. Wood's group will identify the cloudiest areas of our oceans. They'll test various styles of water cannons or sprinklers that can fill the air with microscopic salt particles, the building blocks of clouds.
Well, the aim is not to make new clouds, but to change the clouds that already exist.
Clouds are made up of millions of tiny water droplets that act like mirrors. They form when salt particles are absorbed into the atmosphere.
This is the idea of the sprayers.
If the group can increase the number of droplets or mirrors in the clouds, they believe they can cool the Earth.
My feeling is that as a responsible scientist, we ought to know about the potential for this. And yeah, it's moved from sort of the realms of science fiction into more serious scientists thinking about it.
They call it cloud brightening, and it would only be used if the climate situation reached a critical stage. But the plan has generated tremendous buzz.
Yeah.
Wood is fielding questions from all over the world. Today, he's stuck in his office talking about it on Southern California Public Radio. But his head is still in the clouds.
Strange things take place in my moon dreams. As the lonely and loveless hours go by, your face takes its place in every moonbeam. Moondreams bring thoughts gentle as a sigh.
And from South Korea tonight, news that the Reverend Sun Myung-moon, the self-proclaimed Messiah and founder of the Unification Church, has died. The controversial church gained international fame in the 1970s and 80s, Moon holding mass weddings of thousands of couples at a time. His church grew into a multi-billion dollar business empire, while at the same time it was accused of duping followers out of money. Sun Myung-moon was 92 years old.
Can be
sensation. Moon dreams may be fascination. Love can be our destination. You and I can share this dream. Wishing for you in my moon dreams. As the lonely and loveless hours go by, we'll do until you can share all my dreams. Moon dream, moon dreams, moon dreams, brought by moonbeams in the sky.
From boarding a plane because of Down syndrome, a family is angry because they say that their 16-year-old son was unfairly targeted by the pilot of an American Airlines flight.
Now, the airline says the teenage boy was a security risk. KTLA-5's Carolyn Costello has the exclusive details.
This home video shows Beatty Vanderhorst at a Journey concert. The 16-year-old boy called up on stage and given a guitar by the band. His parents describe him as outgoing, fun-loving, and charming. But last night, they say the son they love was singled out and discriminated against because he has Down syndrome.
We were not allowed on the plane
because this man saw my son and made a decision.
Joan and Robert Vanderhorst, who spoke with us through Skype, tell us as they waited to board an American Airlines flight with their son, they were told they weren't allowed on.
Okay, my question is, why are you singling me out and saying, why aren't you telling them and them and them and all these people that have children that they have to...
In a security-controlled area, you cannot be recording this.
Joan pulled out her cell phone and began to videotape, documenting what she believes was a violation of her son's civil rights and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Her son, labeled a flight risk, can be seen in the video sitting at the gate, quietly playing with his hat. In the video, you can hear Joan sobbing and her husband expressing disbelief.
He's behaving. He's demonstrating he's not a problem.
I kept saying it's only because he has Down syndrome.
The family has flown together dozens of times. The only thing different about last night, they had upgraded for the first time to first class.
That this little boy had a seat in the first class area, and for some reason they didn't want that. That wasn't acceptable.
American Airlines released a statement that reads in part, the young man was excitable, running around and not acclimated to the environment. The pilot attempted to calm him down and acclimate him to the surroundings. His efforts were not successful. For the safety of the young man and the safety of others, American Airlines offered to book another flight for the family. But the family says that statement is untrue. They say they'll sue American Airlines and hope their experience will teach the company and people in general a valuable lesson.
To respect each person's dignity. Every one of us should be treated with equal dignity.
Now the family says they were rebooked on a United flight but were forced to sit in the back row of the plane and no one was allowed to sit near them.
Well, I'm just out of school, like I'm real, real cool. Gotta dance like a fool, got the message and I gotta be a wild. I'm a wild,
wild one.
Oh yeah, I'm a wild one. Gonna break loose, gonna keep a moving wild. Gonna keep a swinging, baby, I'm a real wild child. Gonna keep them moving wild, gonna keep them swinging, baby, I'm a real wild child.
outrage over a school trying to change the way a deaf preschooler signs. The parents of 3-year-old Hunter claim the Nebraska school told them their son's language technique violates the weapons in school policy and he needs to change it. Apparently, his gestures look too much like a gun. Hunter's dad is thankful for the outpouring of support they're getting for the family.
The encouragement and support is amazing. It's more than I could have asked for, and it's been extremely helpful.
The school district denies that they require any student to change their signing techniques and is working with the boy's family to settle the matter.
I hope so, because that's outrageous.
Outrageous!
Well, I'm a real wild one, and I like wild fun. In a world gone crazy, everything seems crazy. I'm a wild one.
Wild, wild child.
I'm a wild one.
Wild, wild child.
Gonna break loose, gonna keep a moving wild, gonna keep a swinging baby, I'm a real wild child. Keep on swinging, baby, I'm a real wild child. Wanna know my name? I'm a wild child.
My son's wearing a T-shirt that says proud graduate of the Obama bin Laden terrorist training camp, and he's got exploding underwear, and he's getting ready to fly to Detroit.
This week, we mark the 11th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. It's time to remember the nearly 3,000 innocent men, women, and children we lost, and the families that they left behind. It's a chance to honor the courage of the first responders who risked their lives on that day and every day since. And it's an opportunity to give thanks for our men and women in uniform who have served and sacrificed, sometimes far from home, to keep our country safe. This anniversary is about them. It's also a time to reflect on just how far we've come as a nation these past 11 years. On that clear September morning, as America watched the towers fall and the Pentagon burn and the records smoldering in a Pennsylvania field, we were filled with questions. Where had the attacks come from, and how would America respond? Would they fundamentally weaken the country we love? Would they change who we are? The last decade has been a difficult one, but together we have answered those questions and come back stronger as a nation. We took the fight to Al-Qaeda, decimating their leadership and put them on the path to defeat. And thanks to the courage and skill of our intelligence personnel and armed forces, Osama bin Laden will never threaten America again. Instead of pulling back from the world, we've strengthened our alliances while improving our security here at home. As Americans, we refuse to live in fear. Today, a new tower rises above the New York skyline, and our country is stronger, safer, and more respected in the world. Instead of turning on each other, we resisted the temptation to give in to mistrust and suspicion. I've always said that America is at war with Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, and we will never be at war with Islam or any other religion. We are the United States of America. Our freedom and diversity make us unique. And they will always be central to who we are as a nation. Instead of changing who we are, the attacks have brought out the best in the American people. More than 5 million members of the 9/11 generation have worn America's uniform over the past decade, and we've seen an outpouring of goodwill towards our military, our veterans, and their families. Together, they've done everything we've asked of them. We've ended the war in Iraq and brought our troops home. We brought an end to the Taliban regime. We've trained Afghan security forces and forged a partnership with the new Afghan government. And by the end of 2014, the transition in Afghanistan will be complete and our war there will be over. And finally, instead of turning inward with grief, we've honored the memory of those we lost by giving back to our communities, serving those in need, and reaffirming the values at the heart of who we are as a people. That's why we mark September 11th as a national day of service and remembrance. Because we are one American family, and we look out for each other, not just on the difficult days, but every day. 11 years later, that's the legacy of 9/11. The ability to say with confidence that no adversary and no act of terrorism can change who we are. We are Americans, and we will protect and preserve this country we love. On this solemn anniversary, let's remember those we lost. Let us reaffirm the values they stood for. And let us keep moving forward as one nation and one people.
I can hear you! I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Most people I've seen who address September 11th, it's more about the conspiracy aspect of it. It's more about it being an inside job. Of course, there's the official story as well. You have different people on different sides of the fence and what have you. And regardless of what side of the fence you may be on, as far as I'm concerned, it's irrelevant because ultimately what's taking place every single year around this event that took place almost a decade ago is the reinstallation of the fear that's associated with the event itself. And this reinstallation of the fear applies to those who accept the official story. And this reinstallation of fear applies to those who have a more conspiratorial orientation. And I do not buy into the official story, so I will say that up front. But I also do not maintain September 11th as being relevant to my life here a decade later. I guess I should explain why that is the case. Because September 11th for millions upon millions upon millions of people, in actuality billions of people on planet Earth, was one of the greatest human tragedies that we have experienced over the last decade. And in actuality, perhaps ever, in terms of media being able to promote such an event to such a grandiose scale, to where people all over the world were tuned in, and people all over the world were affected by the death and destruction and the carnage. And I will propose that there's never been an event that has been so globalized. And part of the reason why, of course, is the fact that we have instant communication with the internet. You got, you know, people have it on the websites, they upload it onto YouTube, onto Google, whatever, what have you. You have instant communication with cell phones. You have people contacting each other all around the world. So information is instantaneous. You can send it out all over the world at any given time. And that's precisely what took place with September 11, 2001. But what really, in essence, what was taking place is that many people were almost forced to live and experience the death and destruction associated with that event. And so the fear that stemmed from that event has caused many people to live lives that have been rooted in fear-based mind control programming. And what do I mean by that? Fear, in terms of a mechanism of control, is the primary means of control that it has been used as a primary means of controlling people. And on many different levels, fear physically, controlling people's physical actions through fear, controlling people's sense of self, sense of empowerment, controlling people's thoughts. Fear oftentimes becomes the mechanism of control. And so if you can use an event that is associated with extreme levels of fear, you have, you know, these terror attacks in New York City and Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, and you have this death and carnage. You have people jumping out of the windows. You have the towers crumbling and all of the death, 3,000, almost 3,000 people, etc. And all of the frenzy associated with that. And then all the graphic images, you know, so many different graphic images. All of this functions as a means of inducing fear into the population. Fear being, again, the major mechanism of control. So therefore, because the event itself was globalized, what you had was a global fear-based mind control apparatus that we call September 11th. And every single year what takes place is people are led to relive the events as a quote-unquote anniversary. Now this is where media, in terms of the media manipulation, takes place. This is to say that every single year for a decade, people, you know, on September 11th, they are forced to relive the event and to quote-unquote celebrate the event. But really what it is a morbid ritual. It's a morbid ritual celebration. And this morbid ritual, not only does it reinstill the fear, because people really, you have to be forced to reflect back on that death and destruction. And in the process of reflecting back, one of the aspects of the human mind is when you reflect back on something, you actually experience that event again. Well, ultimately, people are forced to re-experience the death and destruction. And therefore, all the fear that they felt when it initially took place is actually reprogrammed into them, whether it's conscious or unconscious. It's literally reprogrammed into people's subconscious mind, or I guess if you want to say the conscious mind, but there is a difference, and that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother video. So this is why September 11th is such a significant event in human history, because it was so globalized, and the amount of fear and death and destruction that was associated with it was also globalized. And then this globalization of death and destruction functions as a means of controlling people's thoughts, controlling people's actions, controlling people's manner of experiencing their reality. As another example, because there's been so many different, tragic events that have taken place, but no tragic event has been so propagandized as being this global event as September 11th, 2001. There's other events that you can look at throughout history. You can look at even the World Trade Center bombings. That's another example. Or the bombings in London that took place after September 11th, 2001. You can look at the Titanic even. You know, and even when they brought that movie back out, there's a reason. That's reinstallation of fear-based mind control program. And there's other examples in terms of modern day how this has taken place. We can look at the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The following year, they begin to have stories that are centered around that particular topic, right? That functions as a, you know, forcing people to relive a tragic event that happened the year before. This is by design. Media does this every single year. It's a reinstallation of a program, a reinstallation of a mind control program. Okay. Another example is Katrina. Every single year around the anniversary, you get the stories that come out about Katrina. That's why you're starting to get stories that come out about Katrina as well. But then, of course, around September 11th, every single year, you start to get stories that come out dealing with September 11th. This year, however, has been remarkable because the fear-based mind control programming came out a lot sooner. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And there's a reason why. Of course, I've talked about this in terms of the Global Motion Picture Stage Show. And the Global Motion Picture Stage Show is all of the various news reports, news articles, etc., that come out that are spun or either created out of nothing, meaning that they're absolute fabrications, or a news story that comes out that is spun in such a way to have a resonance with death and destruction, i.e. September 11, 2001. I'll give some more examples of that in just a little while. So I want to take a moment just to break down what the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Reinstallation Program is. Essentially what it is a mechanism of control via fear. Right? A fear-based mind control program to control people's minds, to control how they think, but also to ultimately control their behavior patterns, etc. Because ultimately, if you can control how someone thinks, you're going to control how they behave, right? Behavior being it comes out of a manifestation of people's thoughts, whether those thoughts are their own, meaning conscious, or unconscious, meaning programmed into them. However, many people, the manner in which they think is based upon fear and fear-based mind control programming. And September 11th, being that it was the greatest single fear-based event that we have experienced, and potentially ever, because it was so globalized on the planet, it is being used every single year to reinstall this high level of fear into people, and it functions as a program to subjugate people into a mind state wherein they are led to accept particular agendas, they are led to accept certain thought patterns, they are led to live particular types of lives. And I will say, just on that last point, when we talk about the particular type of life, no one came here, none of you, and this is why it's so important for me to do this video, no one came here to this planet to live in a perpetual state of fear, and no one came here to the planet to be subject to fear-based mind control programming where you cannot actualize the reality that you want because you are in a state of fear. Whether it's subconscious fear or conscious, you are in a state of fear that is impacting your decisions. It is impacting the manner in which you think. And that's why this particular topic is so important. I've been so disappointed that there haven't been too many other folk who are sharing this type of information with people, have not addressed this particular issue, recognizing that September 11, 2001 is in essence a mind control program. An event that took place 10 years ago and you still have people talking about it like it happened yesterday. That's mind control. One of the fascinating dynamics of mind control is that when people are in a state of mind control, they lose track of time.
Getting closer, go, going faster than a roller coaster. different for each person. I mean, depending on our own goals and our own aspirations. But more than anything, it's a state of mind. But even saying that, you can become imprisoned within your own definition of freedom. You can be raised by a school of thought, by your parents, or by your teacher, or by a religion, or by a government, and grow up to feel comfortable within those limitations, not even knowing that you're being held to someone else's ideals. In that case, you look at everybody else who's living different as being crazy. On the flip side, though, a lot of times we tend to conceptualize freedom as being this far-off and distant concept. We don't even see it as being something we can have right now. Instead, we make it to be dependent on other things, like getting a degree, or getting a job, or getting a girlfriend, or whatever else. But I think when you do that, though, you're just locking yourself inside this material conceptualization of freedom. You know, we consume ourselves with these things that we don't have, or what other people do have, thinking that these possessions are going to fill this void. Which is totally untrue, because my dad, when he was growing up, before he came to Canada, he lived in a house made of mud with five brothers and sisters. And he said he was happier back then than he is now. Just goes to show that when you're putting your freedom dependent on something else, you're gonna miss out on what exists around you right now and the reasons to be happy right now. It may be hard to see those reasons, but they're there. You just have to be willing to look for it.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
It's a weird feeling to be, to not stand out. It's good.
Yes, sick of getting strange looks and being the butt of endless jokes, the redheads of the world have united in the Netherlands.
Well, we're in a minority, of course. There are not a lot of people with red hair, so you're always a minor. And now there's so many among us, so that's nice. Yeah,
I'm proud to have red hair, so yeah. I think everybody with red hair is proud of it. Most of the people are, I think.
You don't see them too often, and when you're here at the Redhead Days with almost 1,400 redheads, well, that's very special.
Scores of people from some 50 different countries gathered in the city of Breda to celebrate their genes, with a parade through the city and art exhibitions dedicated to their hair. And a somewhat bizarre photo shoot. There was even a fashion show, with the message that there's only one colour to be seen in. Green, apparently. Although with red hair.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 it's real easy, man.